This is Matt with Damaged Goods on Little Rally Radio. I am here at Wristband City. Today is Wednesday. This is the first day that Wristband City is open for the Hopscotch Music Festival. And I'm here with... Well, I was wondering if you could introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Jeff Hallett. I co-directed a band called Death.
And it's a great documentary about, of course, the band Death, who's one of the headlining acts at Hopscotch this year. I'm super excited about that. And first off, I was going to ask you, how did you come about meeting the band Death?
I actually met the band about 20 years ago, and we met at a music festival in Vermont. I lived in Vermont for about 20 years, and I met the guys up there. My band at the time was playing a show with their band, and we just hit it off. Over the years, we just sort of developed a friendship, and fast forward about... close to 20 years later, one of their sons came up to me, Bobby Jr., Hagney, and he says, "Hey, me and my brothers are covering our father's music. You should come check it out. We're playing at this club in town." And I said, "Okay, I'll go check it out." And I figured they were going to be playing Lamb's Bread, so I'm expecting some reggae music. And lo and behold, they start playing this music that I never heard before. Death, and you know, I heard Keep On Knocking, Politicians, I mean, Rock and Roll Victim. I mean, they played a number of tunes, and I was just completely blown away by the sonic sound that was coming out of the speakers. I mean, I was just like, you know, I felt the same way the Sons did, you know. And Julian explained in the documentary that, "Why didn't you tell me, Bob?" Because, I mean, how can you let something like that just go to the wayside? It's a very, you know, important piece of history, musically speaking. So, from a musical spread, I'm a musician as well. So I'm like, you know, you hear this music, even if you're not a musician, music fan, not music fan, you hear it and you're like, there's something special about this. And then of course their story in itself is just amazing. All the trials and tribulations throughout their life. So I was just honored at that point to be able to hear the music, number one, but then to talk to Bobby Jr. We had a conversation. Our first interview was with Bobby Jr., and to have a conversation that went so great that, you know, I just knew that him telling me the story, that there was something more. There's a film here. So I enlisted. That's why I'm a co-director, because I called a friend of mine, Mark Cabino, who's actually going to be here at the Hopscotch as well festival, and said, you know, I need you to give me a hand here, buddy, and let's make this little movie I've been telling you about. It took him about 3 or 4 weeks for him to read the email and get back to me, but once he did, he knew that there was something special. I sent him the New York Times article, because by that point it had come out, and he read that and he knew, and also hearing the tunes that were up on the Chunklet website, he heard Politicians and Keep On Knocking, the 7-inch that was up there, that Ben Blackwell posted, and he knew just from the article on that there was, you know, we had to document something. So sorry I went on too long.
No, that's great. That's all great information. I was going to ask you, was the band reluctant at first, when you presented the idea of doing a full-length documentary, were they reluctant? Did they feel like it wasn't a good enough story, or like, why would you want to do a movie about it?
Yeah, at first it was very interesting, because at first it was going to be a 20 or 30 minute doc. I was thinking, well, maybe this will be like a, you know, like a PBS short doc, whatever. As we got into interviewing the guys, and then, you know, we interviewed other folks outside, you know, Don Davis and Brian Spears, you know, key figures in the film and also in the recording of the music, we knew that there was a lot more of a film, and then the family dynamic. I mean, we were talking about, you know, in the edit about how, you know, that just the vast number of interviews we have about David and that conversation of how he was such a key figure with the band, and how important he was, how important their brother David Hagney was in the story. And we just knew it was way more than this little short film, you know.
So, how long did it take to actually from start to finish to take to make the documentary?
It was about 4 years, and that's from, like, okay, let's make this, you know, in 2008 to the finish, which is 2012. So, yeah, I mean, it was a solid 4 years. You know, we had a lot of help. It started with me. You know, you read the credits and you're like, oh yeah, it was just you and Mark. No, it was Mark and I and Scott Mosier finding us on Twitter and getting in touch with our friend Nate, who, you know, in turn hooked us up with Matt Pierceria, who hooked us up with our financee, Jerry Farrar, and just all these people were like key figures in making things happen for us. So, but we had a lot of help from our friends. You know, it's like, hey, buddy, can you help me here, Georgia? You know, our friend in Boston, can you help us with this? And she like drops everything and comes and helps. Or, you know, Chris, who just sort of dropped all his stuff and, you know, helped us and went to New York with us. And, you know, just so many, I mean, countless number of people that just helped and pitched in whenever we asked, you know, and was, it was just, I mean, they just knew it was an important piece to tell, you know. So, yeah, 4 years, sorry, long-winded answer, but yes.
No, those are all great answers. That's good. That's way better than, you know, a one- or two-word
yes,
answer.
No.
Yeah. So, was there anything you wanted to include in the documentary that you weren't able to, or did you pretty much squeeze in everything you wanted?
Really wanted Wayne Kramer. Oh, God, I wanted Wayne Kramer so bad. We interviewed Wayne Kramer. There's a, you can actually go on YouTube and see the, deleted scene, if you will. And it's also, it's included on the DVD and stuff like that. But I was like, I was definitely not stoked about not getting him in. But he actually did the liner notes. So if you get the DVD or Blu-ray, you can see the beautiful liner notes written by Wayne Kramer. So, other than that, the story, I mean, I was stoked everybody we were able to get in the film, you know. Of course, you always want Iggy Pop. You know, there's some figures you're, okay, I wish we would have, but you know what? At the end of the day, we made a good movie, you know. We had a lot of people, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, like really just putting their all into making this film. Yeah, you can interview this guy. You can interview countless numbers of other people, you know, but I think we're happy with where we landed. You know, I wouldn't really, is there anything I'd change? Not really. If I could add things, yes, I would. And those are the things I would add. So.
Well, that's Wayne Kramer from MC5. I was going to ask you, what did he think about Death? I mean, was he, I imagine he was pretty ecstatic about it, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, a friend of his sort of shot him the article in the New York Times. He was, you know, when he thought it was a joke. He thought it was like a practical joke or something. That they, you know, these guys didn't exist and stuff like that. I mean, they were just right across town from us, you know.
Right.
They would have been great in the Grandy Ballroom, you know, playing a show with the MC5. I mean, people would have loved them, you know. But, you know, when he found out about it, he loved it, you know. I mean, he's been a... you know, champion in the band for a while now. It's been great, like, since he's found out about it, he's been really excited. Him and his wife. His wife is great. You know, she's amazing to talk to, and she's a big reason why he's in the film, too, because she's a fan as well. So it's neat how stuff works like that, you know.
It seems like the reception has been pretty great as far as all the reviews I've read. Were you surprised by the reception, or did you, you know the story would kind of tell itself?
Well, you know, when we actually got it finished, number one, to get it finished was a big deal. But then when we started submitting to festivals, we would get rejection letters. Like, we submitted to Sundance, we got a rejection letter. We submitted to South by Southwest, we got a rejection letter. We're like, oh my God, we can't get in, you know, this festival, that, and we can't get in a music festival. I mean, it's a music documentary piece. And then, you know, then the next year, we resubmitted to South By, and we won the Audience Award. So it's like, you know, we went to the L.A. Film Fest. That was our first fest. They embraced the film. They were wonderful. Great staff, great way to treat filmmakers. I mean, I can't say enough great things about that festival. They really treat filmmakers with a lot of respect, which is wonderful. It's, I think, the way that directors and people that make movies should be treated, you know, from, you know, producers, right? You know, people that, you know, are there, like, you know, it was really great to be part of that festival. We had some friends come from LA, and they helped us get them into some of the shows and stuff like that too, so that was great. So yeah, we were just psyched to start, like, when we hit LA, you know, we started getting some good reviews about positive feedback about the film, and I mean, I'm just glad we were able to get it out there. I'm glad that, you know, I mean, kids, I was telling somebody a little while ago, I said, you know, when we were in Los Angeles, first film festival, first time, you know, a bigger audience had seen the film, I said, you know, the reviews were great. I was really ecstatic about all the folks that came out and did reviews on it. But I'll tell you what, the most important thing about that was this kid just came up to me and he just told me how he hadn't spoken to his brother in a number of years. And after watching our movie, he called his brother. That made it for me. It really did. So stuff like that, personal stories, I think.
No, that's great. I watched the documentary and I almost teared up, which is not really something I normally do, because I personally think it's hard for a movie to move you in that way. But not that it can't be emotional, but to actually get a physical reaction out of you besides just a mental one. But yeah, I think it's one of the best documentaries as far as rock stuff goes that I've seen in a long time. So I was no problem. And I was going to ask you, do you have any other works that people should be aware of? Anything else that you've done?
10 types at Hopscotch right now. I honestly, I've just concentrated a lot on my still photography, and it's still my focus, but I definitely have an itch to get back in it. And I've talked about another film with Mark that's still, we haven't really fleshed it out yet, but another music documentary. But
is that anything you can talk about right now?
Not yet, unfortunately. But because we're talking to producers right now, we're just trying to sort it out to see if it's actually going to have some legs. But I started working on a doc that we're still sort of in. We're probably about a quarter of the way into that, on the world's hottest pepper, which is grown in Rock Hill, South Carolina, where I live.
Is it the ghost
currently
pepper?
It is a part of a, yes, it's very hot. It is a ghost pepper strain, but it's sort of a hybrid strain. And it's called the Reaper. And it's the Guinness Book of World Records, hottest pepper right now, currently.
Do you need free samples at Hopscotch for that?
Yeah. You know, I should have brought some. I really should have.
Ruined someone's festival experience, right?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Here, have a little bit of this. It's not hot.
Wait till your favorite band's about to come on.
Right. Yeah. And then here you go. Have a little taste of this. But, you know, I mean, we're working on that. So it's a slower process, but...
Is it kind of like that Simpsons episode when Homer eats the world's hottest chili and has like a hallucination?
It's
and
ridiculous.
And that coyote has the voice of Johnny Cash. Have you seen that?
No, but it sounds something that what happens every time you eat the pepper. it's a great pepper though. It tastes good, but it's very deceiving. It can come back and bite you in the ass, as they say.
If you have a death wish, is there anywhere around here you can get that pepper?
Oh, we try not to do that.
No. Yeah. I'm kind of curious. I know it's probably a bad idea, but I kind of want to maybe just at least be in the room with it, right?
Right, yeah. The guy, it's Puckerbuck Pepper Company is the name of the company, actually, and the guy, Ed, is a great guy. He's growing, you know, some of the hottest peppers in the world right now, and even hotter than the one that's actually currently the world record holder he already has.
Wow.
So it's insane. But they're very tasty. They're very good pepper. I mean, I like hot peppers anyway, but they're very tasty peppers, so they're very good for, like, the hot pepper connoisseur. But hopefully, yes, there'll be a documentary. to complete on that. But we're
the hottest documentary of the year.
The hottest documentary.
Yeah, that's got to be the quote on the front from Little Valley Radio, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. There you go. There you go. But yeah, just I'm here with my buddy Chris Morgan, and we're here shooting 10 types. And, you know, it's just been a great experience, like, you know, shooting with him and actually just shooting in general. Like, I love shooting this kind of photography.
Could you maybe briefly describe what a 10 type is? Because some of us aren't so familiar.
Yeah, so you take a piece of aluminum. Well, we're using aluminum. It's called essentially alumatype or 10 type, a lot of people call it. So you pour collodion on the piece of metal. You put that in a silver nitrate bath. It becomes light sensitive. You take it out to your camera. You make your exposure. After you make your exposure, you take it out of your camera, and you take it back to your dark room or dark box is what we have here. You pour developer on it. It becomes, you know, you can actually see the negative for several seconds. Probably, you know, today we're doing 30 seconds. Put it, you wash it off to stop the development. Put it in a fix. Take it out. Clean it with some water. So let it sit, and then you varnish it. So it's kind of a multi-step process, but that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it. It's photography that was very popular in the Civil War era. So that's the kind of photography we're doing. So
you think you could give me a picture with hanging out with the band Death as a 10 type?
We're actually shooting on Saturday, shooting the band. So I'm really excited about that because, I wanted to take their picture anyway because, I mean, I actually took some of the photography in for the DVD and Blu-ray. But it'll be neat to set them up in a portrait setting and to take it a 10 type too, because there's actually a lot of history behind the house that they live in too that's not in the film, about how it was part of the Underground Railroad, which is kind of really interesting.
Oh, nice, yeah.
You know, and Dennis told us about that. He showed us sort of where the, you know, in their pantry where it actually leads to the other next door house.
Oh,
next
wow,
door neighbor's
that's
house.
Awesome, yeah.
So it's like a really cool story. I don't know if you ask him about that, but it's really, really cool.
I had no idea that I mean that. That's
it's
cool.
Very neat. So I think for a historical perspective, I told Bobby this. I said it would be great just for the house you guys live in because they share a house together. I think it'd be great, you know, for that historical aspect as well. So.
Well, so thanks for talking to us today on Little Valley Radio. It's awesome. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, no problem. I was going to ask you, the film, was it put out by Drafthouse Films? Is that correct?
That is correct. It's available on Drafthouse Films. You can get it is on Netflix. It is on Amazon Prime. But I highly recommend folks that are really interested in the music and the band exploring a little bit more to actually get and buy the DVD and Blu-ray because it actually helps the band, but also helps us as filmmakers for our next movie. So in that way, it's good. Internationally, it's available on Vimeo. You can actually buy it anywhere in the world on Vimeo. So yeah, it's available in all markets outside the U.S. on that as well. So there's the places that have it, and we're looking for more distribution outside of the United States as well. But in the United States, Drafthouse Films has it. It's at drafthouse.com, drafthousefilms.com, and also at a band called death.com, you can get it.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks, and we look forward, everybody is, to the show Saturday, of course, so yeah. Hopefully we'll see you there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We're going to be... my co-director Mark and I will be introducing the band, so we're excited to be doing that.
Oh, great. All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you.